Welcome to Study, Grow, Know, where we discuss theology, prophecy, and current political issues from a conservative biblical perspective. Here's your host, Dr. Fred DeRuvo.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for joining me. I hope you're having a great day. This is another episode of Study, Grow, Know, and today we're going to be talking about false priests, Hophni and Phinehas. Now, as I've noted before, the book of Judges tends to focus on the roughly 150 years out of about 450 years overall of the downside of Israel at the time. Now, the book of Judges also provides a backdrop for the books of Ruth and 1 and 2 Samuel. And it is a dark background highlighting anarchy that stemmed from lawlessness. And this degeneracy was basically something that existed in virtually every part of Israel society. Though, of course, not every person. So we want to make that distinction. But it included the priesthood. It was almost as if God is in a hurry to broach the subject that we learn of two of Eli's sons, Hophni and Phinehas. Quote, "Now the sons of Eli were corrupt. They did not know the Lord." 1 Samuel 2:12, and that's the New King James Version. Now, imagine being in the service to the Lord and not actually knowing God at all. How sad is that? Is that happening today? Oh, you bet it is, unfortunately. There are, I believe, many people in leadership positions within Christendom who have no knowledge of God, who have no relationship with God, and it is those people who are leading us astray. And we're going to be talking about that in another upcoming article as I continue my previous series on false teachers. So you can join me then. But for now, Eli was a priest who lived during the time of the judges. You may recall his initial meeting with Hannah, who eventually gives birth to a son named Samuel, whom she promised to loan to the Lord, 1 Samuel 1. Now, Samuel eventually became a priest and judge in Israel. He learned the sacrificial system and priestly responsibilities under Eli. Eli's two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, also learned priestly responsibilities from him, but turned out much differently than Samuel did. Now, verses 13 through 16 of 1 Samuel 2 inform us that Hophni and Phinehas, two priestly heretics, decided they would withhold the best from God when people brought their animals to sacrifice. Now, if you're familiar with the way this went, you were supposed to sacrifice your animal, and then part of that animal could be given to the priests. That was part of what they, quote-unquote, earned for being in the priesthood. But Phinehas and Hophni would send a servant to take as much flesh from that sacrificed animal as a large cooking fork could hold. Now, if the person who was offering the sacrifices objected, well, then the servant would become menacing, promising to take the meat by force if necessary. Verse 17 of 1 Samuel 2 sums up how God viewed their actions. Quote, "Therefore, the sin of the young men was very great before the Lord, for men abhorred the offering of the Lord," unquote. Now see, these two priests were actually stealing from God what was due only him. Now, as terrible as this was, God was not done informing us of other sins that these two priests in name only committed. 1 Samuel 2:22 tells us more of the sordid tale. Listen to this, quote, "Now Eli was very old, and he heard everything his sons did to all Israel, and how they lay with women who assembled at the door of the tabernacle of meeting." Wow. Now at this point, Father Eli tries to be a parent in verses 23 through 25, and it says this, "Why do you do such things? For I hear of your evil dealings from all the people. No, my sons, for it is not a good report that I hear. You make the Lord's people transgress. If one man sins against another, God will judge him. But if a man sins against the Lord, who will intercede for him?" Well, the plain fact of the matter is that these two sons of Eli should not have been in the priesthood at all.
Eli should have removed them long before this point. The result was their arrogance and hateful attitude toward God, which ultimately reflected back on Eli.
And you know, the Pharisees of Jesus' day, they were very much like Hophni and Phineas. Jesus called out the hypocrisy of the Pharisees, for which their hatred of him grew. Jesus was telling the truth to the Pharisees about what they were like in their hearts. That's something we can't do, by the way, but Jesus could do it because he was and remains God. And he saw the intentions of their heart. But again, we can't do that. We cannot judge another person's heart. We can judge their words and their actions, and we are called to do that. And of course, we must judge our own words and actions and intentions of our hearts as well. There's not enough of that today, I don't think, but we'll get into that later. So Jesus was telling the truth, but they didn't want to hear that, the Pharisees, because, oh, they were very important people who received accolades and honor from the average person in Israel. Jesus apparently was not aware of just how important these Pharisees were to Israel. Oh boy. Well, it's clear the Pharisees were not interested in being true to God, nor in truthfully representing God before Israel and the world. Again, are we seeing this happening within Christendom today? Yes, and that's unfortunate. Paul also spent time calling false teachers and troublemakers out by name in a few of his epistles. There was and remains a need for this within the church today. In light of our circumstances and growing apathy and heresy within Christendom as a whole, there are way too many men and women leaders today who poke God in the eye with their false teachings, and little is done about it. These people are routinely held up as being, oh, amazing Bible teachers. But really, it's despicable. If Paul were with us today, many would be hushing him up if he were to come and call out some of these teachers on the carpet. I'll include some of these teachers in an upcoming article to continue my previous series on false prophets and teachers. That's upcoming. But let's get back to Hophni and Phineas. The tragedy of those two, as well as Eli, cannot be overemphasized. Juxtaposed against this lawlessness of Hophni and Phineas and relative indifference of Eli is Samuel himself, who is said to, quote, have grown in stature and in favor both with the Lord and men, verse 26. Starting in verse 27 of 1 Samuel 2, God speaks to Eli through an unnamed prophet. That prophet pronounces God's judgment by saying, behold, the days are coming that I will cut off your arm and the arm of your father's house, so that there will not be an old man in your house. Verse 31. Now, this prophecy was later emphasized to Eli through the young Samuel, chapter 3, before it occurred. Here's what we read, verses 34 through 35. Now, this shall be a sign to you that will come upon your two sons, on Hophni and Phinehas. In one day they shall die, both of them. Then I will raise up for myself a faithful priest who shall do according to what is in my heart and in my mind. I will build him a sure house, and he shall walk before my anointed forever, unquote. Now, in one day, both Hophni and Phinehas died, as did Eli. God had begun ending the line of Eli by directly killing his two sons, and then Eli himself fell backwards in his chair after hearing the news of his son's death, and he died as well, 1 Samuel 4. It was finished by Saul when the priests of Nob were slaughtered, though one priest, Abiathar, escaped to David, 1 Samuel 22, and Abiathar, of course, eventually died, and thus Eli's lineage came to an absolute end. Now, what might have been different had Eli had the backbone to train up his sons properly or to remove them from the priesthood when he saw their ongoing sin? The same truth should apply to many
within Christendom today. Yet not only do they continue their blasphemous teachings and actions, but they are often applauded by the people in the pews. Why is that? Well, it's because of a complete dearth of discernment today. Emotional virtue has made its way into Christendom. That's the reality. If it feels good, oh, then it's got to be good, right? It's got to be correct. Wrong. You know, we hear a great deal today from Christians who argue that we should never judge another. We should always offer grace and love. Well, since we're all sinners, we should never be in the position of calling out sin in anyone else. Because, after all, we ourselves are not perfect, are we? You know, I've read too many times, and maybe you have too, when some Christian leader falls through sin, many Christians come to the fore with, oh, wait a minute, he who is without sin cast the first stone, and other snippets of scripture, usually ripped completely out of context. As I said before, I'm going to spend some time on at least one upcoming article dealing with the subject of judging. But if you go to my webpage, studygrownoblog.com, or if you look at the PDF transcript for this particular audio, there is a link from an article I wrote also already in 2018 about judging and judge not, etc., and what it really means. So I wrote that a few years ago. But in short, if God meant that we should never, with humility, correct others in the church, if we should never speak out against the sin that others are willfully involved in, then I have to wonder why we have other portions of the New Testament that expressly tell us to do exactly that. That sin could involve sexual liaisons, as we've seen recently. It could involve pilfering from the church, teaching heresy, or something else. It cannot be allowed to go unchecked. That's the reality. Once you allow that leaven to remain in the church, the local church body, it will filter and grow throughout. The word today is grace, as though this means that Christians are to accept everything, including sin and heresy, without ever offering a word of chastisement or biblical correction or rebuke. Why are we focused so much on grace to the exclusion of anything else? Have these Christians who advocate that position, have they ever read the book of Galatians? As merely one example, have they read any of Paul's epistles? It is remarkable how often I read of Christians who rise to defend fallen Christian leaders by playing the "he who is without sin" card. One person recently stated that she understood, quote-unquote, Ravi's sexual addiction. I'm talking about Ravi Zacharias, because she was a recovering heroin addict herself. Well, I'm sorry, I don't see how the two equate. On one hand, heroin, a psychotropic chemical drug, can and does alter the brain patterns, resulting in a physical addiction that causes the brain to literally need more heroin. Alcoholism is similar, where the brain comes to need alcohol because it cannot survive without it due to chemical changes that have occurred in the brain of an alcoholic. If a seasoned alcoholic goes without alcohol for 7 to 10 days, the DTs will kick in, and they could kill that person if they do not get either more alcohol or medical treatment to overcome their addiction. But a sexual addict? I have no idea what that is, except to say that it is someone who is hooked on sex or pornography because of the fact that they deliberately focus on it too much until it becomes a habitual preoccupation. Now, just as Ravi Zacharias did, these quote-unquote addicts tend to design their lives to fulfill their lusts. They also lie often to cover their tracks. There is no chemical change in the brain because someone is addicted to sex, as far as I'm aware. They could stop if they chose by fleeing from it, leaning on God to empower them to do so. But modern psychology has simply come alongside men and women and given them another excuse to sin by claiming there is such a thing as sexual addiction, thereby removing the responsibility from the person. They're just broken. They need help. We need to help them.
They have a sexual problem. Let's get them help. Well, yeah, let's get them help. But they need to help themselves, especially if they're Christians or say they are. The church has to do better. We need to do as Paul has stated. We should mark and avoid all those who preach a different gospel, who traffic in lies and who heap sin upon sin and eventual ruin on their lives and those who support them. This is what Paul says. Now I urge you, brothers, to watch out for those who create divisions and obstacles that are contrary to the teaching you have learned. Turn away from them. For such people are not serving our Lord Jesus Christ, but their own appetites. By smooth talk and flattery, they deceive the hearts of the naive. Romans 6:17-18. Now, today, it's really not about that, is it? It's about, hey, whoever is without sin should cast the first stone, or grace, grace, grace. The truth? We should not hate other people. We should not condemn them. We should not delight in pointing out failures in others or ourselves, but it must be done. If we are to be a building unto God that clearly seeks His will and for His glory, the question is, how much do we love God and how much do we love self? That's really the question. Too many today enter into ministry with their own agendas in order to feed their own appetites. In fact, too many women in leadership positions teach both men and women, and many of these are from the Southern Baptist Convention, which seems to increase in heresy every week. It is discouraging what I'm seeing taking place and what others are seeing and calling out. It's very discouraging. Today's Christendom has become the Laodicean church. We are weak, we are ineffective, we are heretical, yet we appear proud of it. Unwilling to rock the boat and root out any error or division or problems in the church. The church of Laodicea lacked sound teaching. They could not see truth, nor did they miss it. They felt blessed because they were rich. Like too many Christians today who have become enamored with their own quote-unquote blessedness, they fail to understand God's nearing judgment. They literally smile benignly as the hurricane approaches, completely oblivious to the destruction that's going to occur. This is God's chastisement. He's not going to ignore what continues to be acceptable within Christendom. Those who offer rebuttals to error that they see are labeled troublemakers, and they are panned. They're ignored. They're vilified. It is time for those who really love the Lord to stand up and reject the spirit of Laodicea, the spirit of Babylon that has seriously infected Christendom today. I don't believe there remains a reasonable excuse to remain in a church where dysfunctional leaders clearly lack discernment. Now, I realize it is a difficult thing for many Christians to consider leaving a church they may have known and loved for years. But if truth and discernment is lacking, what choice is there? It's better to fellowship with just several committed Christians than be involved in a body of people who cannot see the problems in their midst and they think everything is fine. We could take some big lessons from Hophni and Phinehas, false priests of 1 Samuel chapter 2. Thanks for joining me today. Until we meet again, may the Lord open your eyes to show you how blessed you are in Him.
You've been listening to Study, Grow, Know with Dr. Fred DeRuvo. Please join us each week for new broadcasts that deal with theology, prophecy, and political issues from a biblical, conservative perspective.